When Judy Stigger and her husband decided to adopt, they chose children who very obviously did not look like them.
If you're a very private person, this is probably very hard to do because people are curious and do ask how much the baby cost and whether that's one of those crack babies. The questions are amazing that people feel free to ask.
People ask those questions because the Stiggers are white. And in Chicago, almost three decades ago, they adopted two children who were biracial. Judy Stigger had to decide on the story she would tell when those questions came up.
People would say, "Do you have any real children?" And I would just turn to him and say, "No, I just have this plastic one." And Aaron would hold his arms out and go, "Ta-da!"
We almost were going to take that show on the road.
That's the voice of Aaron, the Stigger's younger adopted child. He's 26 now. And this morning, Judy and Aaron Stigger help us to begin a series of conversations about adoption in America. We'll hear some of the stories that adoptive families tell outsiders and each other, the things that come to define who those families are. Judy Stigger told us the story of the day she picked up her infant son.
By then we had our daughter, who was at the point 2.5. She was sitting on the couch and she wanted to hold him, and so we walked over and let him sit in her lap. And she looked up and said, "He likes me." And I had this image of having a family.
Why did you decide to adopt?
We're infertile and we wanted to have a family.
That simple?
That simple.
And how much did you think about race when you began thinking about adoption?
I thought about it, but it wasn't the deciding factor. You know, when you adopt, you have to think about age, race, and health. And mine was age. I wanted a baby.
Now, I have to mention that at the time, some years before, the National Association of Black Social Workers had issued this statement condemning transracial adoption.
I believe the term was cultural genocide.
So you knew all about this?
I knew all about that.
Was there a moment when you had a conversation with your husband and sat down and said, "Do we want to do this?"
I don't think we ever had that conversation. I think we had a conversation that said, if we do this, this means we will only live in certain kinds of neighborhoods. He's at that point, an attorney, a junior partner, so this would limit where we would choose to live. It would color, to use the verb, friends we would have. We understood it had some implications.
Did you lose any friends?
We lost a grandma. And I hadn't seen that one coming. On the side, I had thought there might be a problem. She was tickled pink to have great-grandchildren. And on the side, I hadn't seen it coming. She was embarrassed that the neighbors might see these children in her home.
And did she refuse then to see your children or to see you anymore?
She was a woman with a bit of a tongue, which I had up until then always enjoyed. But I wasn't sure I wanted to expose my kids to what she might say. So we didn't involve her in our family anymore.
Now, Aaron Stigger, I'm assuming you don't very well remember that first time that you were put in your sister's lap.
I don't remember much of my colicky babyhood. Just the good parts.
But if I can get you to stretch your memory back a little bit, is there a moment when you recognized that you were in some way different from your parents, your adoptive parents?
I think it was maybe when I was about 3 or 4. I was looking at the tool that my dad used to go through his hair, as you guys would call a comb.
Mm-hmm.
And the comb really doesn't go through the afro very well.
And you wanted to do what your dad was doing, I bet.
Yeah, I wanted to have the little waves that white people get in their hair when they get it all wet. That's when I started to notice a difference. Also, I think it has to do with age and what you're taught in school and what you're taught on Sesame Street. You learn that one of these things is not like the other. You learn the difference between color and hair texture and size and all that.
Was there a moment when that became really difficult for you to deal with or absorb?
It never became difficult. My dad was always my dad, and my mom was always my mom. The only time that it became an issue was when I'd bring new friends home from school. "So your mom's white?" I'm like, "Well, yeah." "Oh, so your dad must be black." And yeah.
Then your dad would come home and...
I'd agree with him because my birth father's black, so I wasn't technically lying.
What did your mom tell you? And she's here to refresh your memory if you forget. What did she tell you about your race or about her race?
She told me that white people ate sauerkraut and black people ate fried chicken. No.
She did not tell you that.
She certainly didn't. She made sure that I had black friends and that they talked with other black parents. You know, every once in a while, she'd like throw in a Kwanzaa once a year. And it wasn't really celebrating Kwanzaa. It was more so that they put forth the effort to expose me to these things that they weren't used to doing.
Judy Stigger?
Mm-hmm.
How much thought did you put into that effort you were making?
Actually, I put quite a bit of it into it. This I learned from my daughter. When she was about 8, We spread across the bed all the congratulations cards we'd gotten when we adopted her, because now she could read them. And then she looked at me and just got this pain wash across her face and said, "Mom, was I supposed to be white?" And I looked at the cards and realized every one of them had a little white baby face on it.
Mm.
And it struck me that this parenting business wasn't going to be about not being prejudiced. It was going to be about being inclusive. So I start sending cards to all the extended family members. So I sent one to my mother on, I think it was her birthday, with a black woman on it.
Mm.
And I get this call back from her that says, "The art was lovely." And I said, "Oh, good." And I'm waiting. And she says, "Okay, bye." And she's gone. Then Easter comes along. So my kids get an Easter card. And my daughter takes hers upstairs and opens it and comes flying down the steps, holding this card out in front of her. And it has what in our tradition is the risen Christ in it. And he's black and he has dreads and he has been working out. And she holds it out in front of me and she says, "My grandma loves me." And I thought, I have to do this in a much more active way than I've been doing it. So all the angels on our tree are now black.
Yeah,
and,
we don't have any white angels anymore.
We do. You brought one, remember?
Mom
you segregated the tree.
The neighborhood and the tree.
Aaron, have you ever had an opportunity to get in touch with or learn more about your birth family?
Yeah, I met my birth mom when I was about 12 years old. Just wanted to check her out. Just wanted to see if there are any physical similarities, since I don't have any in my house.
The second time we got together with them, I was up at a conference, and she's in Minnesota. She's taking him out shopping for a couple hours while I attend something. I've gotten to know her well enough, I trust that completely. But he and she are walking away from me down the hall, and they just sort of had the same swing to their walk. Mm-hmm. It affected me much more than I thought. I thought, that's part of who he is. And I realized I was still had all these images in my head about my right to be his mom, that I needed to get worked out, not on him, that he was fine and he was mine, and it was okay that he got his walk from somebody else.
Judy and Aaron Stigger, thanks very much.
Thank you. My pleasure.
By the way, the Stiggers worked out an unusual way to draw their family tree for school projects, and they'll talk about that at NPR.org. Our conversations on the air continue tomorrow when we'll hear of an overseas adoption and the devastating story that two Indian girls had to tell when they arrived in America.